This is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
Brady O. Quinn, my O brothers, the O brothers today, Monday Night Football.
Yeah, there's not much to recap.
Monday Night Football.
The reality is the actual Manning broadcast, when you have guests like Tom Brady on there and Marshawn Lynch, mm-hmm. probably will steal a lot of the headlines surrounding this game.
Sure.
Nonetheless, you know, look, the Saints get a good win. Mm-hmm. To me, that was crucial because we talked about this a little bit yesterday. When you look at that NFC playoff picture, I think outside of the loser of the NFC West division, meeting between basically the Cardinals and Rams right now, it's the Saints and then who? Like, you're kind of asking yourself, like, it's up in the air. Maybe you're not a believer in the Saints at this point with the Jameis Winston experience, even though they go on the road and he does enough, they do enough to be able to get a win versus the Seattle Seahawks. But that's where we stand right now. It is kind of wide open after some of the more dominant teams in the NFC. The wind played a factor. The one thing is, you know, everyone actually like, oh, the rain. First off, the rain in Seattle is not like it's that big of a downpour. Mm-hmm. It's always the wind. The wind and then the cold, which it wasn't that bad last night. Usually that's going to play a factor in play calling, play a factor in the kicking game, play a factor in throwing the football. So all those things were on display, but you know, honestly, it was, I don't want to say a sloppy game, but it wasn't one of the better games. I just think I come away impressed every time, LeVar, because if I was to ask you, like, who's the one player you have to stop on the Saints, given that they don't have Michael Thomas right now?
And they didn't stop him.
No, they never can. They never. I'm like,
That's Alvin Kamara, everyone, if you're wondering what we're being sarcastic about. Rand didn't have a ton of yards, but was over 100 yards receiving and altogether just torched the Seahawks.
I mean, that two-minute drive, you're not watching the Seattle Seahawks and go, all right, we saw him take that little it was like a little outlet or a little option route for about 40 yards or whatever it ended up being. I think it was like a 30-yard gain. Once you see that, aren't you as a defense saying, okay, maybe I need to force Jameis Winston to throw to someone else or throw downfield and not give him this easy completion that either leads to a big game or leads to a touchdown? Aren't you saying that out there?
I mean, to put it in perspective, Trauman, who was the next closest receiving leader, was at 36 yards.
Yeah.
The next closest was 32 yards with Callaway. Interesting note, Jameis Winston was the second leading rusher with 40 yards, had a 5-yard average in the game. I thought it was an interesting game because I continue to look at this New Orleans Saints team, Q, as almost like an anomaly. I'm not really sure if the phenomenon of the New Orleans Saints and what Sean Payton has been able to do in terms of get quarterbacks, you know, playing at a high level. I mean, he even did it with Drew Brees. And so to me, I'm looking at it like, okay, should we start believing in the fact at 4-2, and maybe not always the best looking ways of going about doing it, but nonetheless, no turnovers, right, and still being effective enough to find Kamara in the passing game, which was what he needed to do, was to find someone who can make a difference for them in this game, to go into one of the most hostile environments. It's one of the tougher places to play in the National Football League, the 12th man. And maybe it's not as crazy as it once was, but it's still nonetheless just the way it's you know, constructed, the noise level, the way the players are up on top of, or the fans are up on top of you. It's a hard place to go in and play. And so for New Orleans to get in there and get out with a 13-10 victory, it says to me that this is there. Okay, let me ask you this. Is there any way, and I believe I know where you're going to go, but is there any way that there's a debate or a conversation that the Saints could somehow, some way, find a way to win their division?
I don't think so. I just think they're. No, I mean, because to me, they're playing at two different levels. You know, I think the Saints, and really if you look at what Sean Payton's doing, I get more the sense that he's trying to do everything he can to manage the game to get wins, as opposed to just kind of letting those players, you know, play loose, like let them cut it loose.
Mm-hmm.
Like two entirely different things. Like I don't – maybe towards the – I mean, again, with Drew Brees, he's a Hall of Famer. I know Sean Payton entrusted him to go out there and do what he needed to do. But, you know, I think the instances where he was trying to manage the game at times was, to be quite honest, when he put in Taysom Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are instances where he's basically saying, like, this is what I feel like is best for the team. I'm going to insert this now and then see what if we can't get more offense out of it, see if we can't create a different dynamic offensively to challenge defenses. But that was really only it, right? Like, when he inserted him a Wildcat – that's the only times where I feel like he kind of had his thumb on the offense trying to control things. With the Saints, it feels like it's everywhere, everything,
mm-hmm.
and how he's going about trying to get this team to a winning record to win the division if they can. I find it highly unlikely. Look, maybe when they get Michael Thomas back, you know, maybe when they get, you know, someone else who can help take the top off of the defense, because I don't know that Alvin Kamara can hold up at this rate.
Mm.
I mean, they really have been trying to feed him and utilize him, and I get that. Like, he's a special player, but he's a running back. He takes all those hits, man. Eventually, that goes to the wayside. I just think the other side of this Monday Night Football game, it's not so much about what the Saints can be. It's what the Seattle Seahawks aren't.
Mm.
And I know we expected them to struggle without Russell Wilson. I get that. But they're 2-5 now, man. And Russell ain't coming back for a little time. Like, I'm not saying the Jacksonville Jaguars are gonna come into Seattle next week and be able to find a way of winning. I'm not ruling it out at this point,
mm-hmm.
because what I saw offensively from the Seahawks didn't make me think that, you know, they're going to put up a bunch of points in the Jaguars. But I think Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks are in a really tough spot. I mean, they're 0-3 at home this year. I can't tell you the last time that's been the case in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Where we talk about that advantage, maybe it's not there anymore. And they're looking at 2-5, staring that in the face, staring potentially what, the first losing season since Russell Wilson is drafted there and has started for them as quarterback. Granted, not there now, but he'll be back.
Mm-hmm.
So I just look at the way their schedule sets up, and I'm looking at next week versus Jacksonville, and now it's a question mark. Where when Russell's there, or even when Geno first took over, I was kind of thinking to myself, yeah, I could still see them winning this game. I don't know now. Like, I'm curious to see what the spread will be on that one. And then I think if you're a Seahawks fan, you just hope. You hope and pray that Russ can come back, because they got the bye after Jacksonville, and then they've got to go to Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And if not that game, then maybe you're saying Arizona, because at least that's a divisional game. That's one that's going to matter. They both obviously matter in the grand scheme of things. But still, to me, it's when can you get Russ back? Because he's got to come in and be the hero to save the day the way this team's playing right now.
You know, another interesting point to add to all of that is we know the Seattle Seahawks to be a running-heavy team, even with Russ doing what he does. And I think you're seeing the value of what Russell Wilson brings to the table in his absence. But you got to keep in mind, Alex Collins was your leading rusher. 16 times he carried the ball, but only 35 yards. Had a 2.2 average. And you can't get it done if your DNA is heavily connected to being able to run the ball. So, listen, you're talking about a team that's rated just outside of 10 in the New Orleans Saints. Now, I would have thought that they would have been higher by now just coming into the season, but they have had to overcome some injuries, suspensions, and they're still ranked at 11th in total defense. That gives me a little bit of confidence that this may, like you said, with the return of Michael Thomas, this could turn into a conversation that develops as this season goes on as to what that looks like for New Orleans within the division. But I'm not going to shy away from saying that there's a possibility in some way, some shape or form that a competitive end could be, you know, imminent for the NFC South.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I need advice for what is going to take place with one Green Bay Packers in the biggest game of the season, and your defensive coordinator and your biggest player outside of one Aaron Rodgers, Mr. Davante Adams, is in protocol. So, if he's able to play, I guess you could give us that's best case scenario, but the possibilities of him not being able to play, or you possibly not having your defensive coordinator, what's this game look like? What's the approach to this? How are you looking at this information?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because it sounded like they're already ruling out Joe Barry. And I'm not going to – I don't – you know, as far as if people are vaccinated or not, what their status is, I don't care. That's your own personal decision. Like, one way or another, like, everyone do you. But it sounds like he's already ruled out, which kind of leads you to think, all right, maybe he's not. Whereas it seemed, at least based on the reports of Davante Adams, he's most likely out or doubtful. Meaning, if he got a negative test today – it could have been a false positive. So you'd have to get a negative test today and tomorrow, and he would be able to come back and play Thursday. So given that Joe Barry, it sounds like he's reportedly out and wouldn't have a chance to come back and coach in it. You know, the Davante Adams obviously impacts this more than anything else. Even though, I mean, you could make the case. You're playing against Kyler Murray, this explosive offense. You'd like to have your DC there making adjustments throughout the course of the game with you and trying to come up with stuff. But he'll still be able to help the coaching staff game plan because you only got one day to really practice anyway in the short week. So with Adams, I mean, the crazy thing is, I mean, even though he's like an essential part of the passing game, there's no doubt about it. Rodgers had a couple of games last year without him. And during that two-game span, he threw for over 600 yards, seven touchdowns. So I know we're all concerned that, hey, if Adams doesn't play, like, what's going to happen to this Packers offense? It survived last year. It was okay. Like, it's going to be all right. It's going to be okay. I just think the interesting dynamic is the betting line. What we saw yesterday from the betting line was when this news came out, and he's not even fully ruled out yet, it moved about 3 points, 2.5 points, depending on what book you're looking. That is astronomical for a non-quarterback. Usually a quarterback is out, you see 3 points in line movement. But this is for a wide receiver, so it shows you kind of
how
the respect,
good he is, huh?
How good he is, what people think of him.
But why didn't they take what you just said into consideration in creating that line? They have won without him.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. That's what it moved to, right?
Yeah,
so the
right.
Lines, obviously, it comes out. It's initially 3 or 4. Now it's out to 6 in some books. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how you know, the news about his testing and so forth today, tomorrow, could potentially impact that in any way.
Change the line again.
Well, maybe. I mean, I think it's changed for how it's going to be. I think what happens is you see initial movement like that, and really the money's going to come in and dictate which way it goes from there, right? Okay. If a bunch of people then start pounding Green Bay getting 6 points in this case versus the Arizona Cardinals, that's going to adjust the line down, right? Books don't want to be so much on one side or the other. They'd like it to be even, split right down the middle. That's how they know they've got a good line, where they're not paying out, you know, one side way too much because, you know, obviously either someone knows something or maybe they're on the outside in. Either way, that's not how you stay in business. And so that line has adjusted. I think come Thursday, once we get more clarity, that's probably the time to bet this, whether you are a sharp bettor or whether you're, you know, part of the public bettors. Either way, it's still just kind of interesting to think about the impact of one player like Adams and how good he is within this offense. And obviously, think about Vance Joseph and the Cardinals. They're probably looking at being like, yeah, if he's out, man, like, we don't feel scared of this passing attack. You know, we don't have to worry about putting in those double plays on third down, red zone, where we're just trying to shut down Davante Adams. But it also makes it harder to predict what that offense is going to do. So no matter what, it's still a challenge, right? You're still taking on Aaron Rodgers, even though he's without one of his best targets.
All right, now my question would be, because one way or the other, right, you get Davante Adams, you don't have Davante Adams. The one thing that exists that is, to me, the biggest question of this game and of the week, possibly, is can this defense keep up with that Arizona Cardinals offense. They are looking like some straight assassins out there, like silent killers. And I don't know that if you have Devontae Adams, that this team can actually stop Arizona enough for Aaron Rodgers and company to be able to have enough points on the board for them to win. That's for me the biggest question going into this game. How are you looking at it?
I keep waiting for there to be that disconnect, that game where we go, there it is. Like the Cardinals took a step, or you know, they took a step back. They slowed down. Yeah,
I
keep waiting for that to happen this year, and I feel like maybe that's just on me for
not
buying into.
Well, that's what they've done in years past since Kyler's gotten there. They have had little fall offs and little slides and skids during his time, where it's like, okay, there it is. Like you just said, there have been those games, so they have not done that this year.
No, and the hard part, too, is, look, they're playing at home. I mean, there's an advantage there big time. Like, you don't think that fan base is excited? Which is, I mean, it's low-key one of the better kind of fan bases when you think about, you know, some of the people in Arizona, where they support that team out in Glendale. So it's not going to be an easy environment for Green Bay to walk into. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just look at it and say, all right, like, we'll see what they're able to do. I think the hardest thing when you try to defend the Arizona Cardinals is you're always trying to expect the unexpected. And you've got that with Kyler Murray because of how he scrambles, how he gets outside the pocket, the way he creates. That's the difficulty is, you know, they can, you know, whether it's Joe Barry or not, right, and anyone else on the defensive staff, they can practice all they want until you get in a live game scenario with Kyler Murray, who when he drops back, if he doesn't see Hopkins or A.J. Green or Rondale Moore or Zach Ertz now, right, who just steps in last week after getting traded there and has his longest touchdown reception of his career, you got all these guys you got to worry about. And so if you play man-to-man, you're done. You're cooked because Kyler Murray's going to see a lane. He's going to run. He's going to pick up 20. And if you play zone, someone's going to find a soft spot. Someone's going to be open. And so I think they're so hard to stop. And one of the things that, I mean, if we're really getting into like the details now, like I remember watching a lot of Cliff Kingsbury and their offense at Texas Tech, and then watching when he got to the NFL, how there were kind of some similarities, meaning if you looked at their passing game, it was either short or behind the line of scrimmage or downfield, like plus 20 throws. There was none of that intermediate part of the field that they were trying to attack all the time. It was like under 10 yards or over 20 yards. There was like a 10-yard space that they just didn't throw to. It was almost like a mid-range jump shot, right? Like in the NBA. Like you either get layups, dunks, or trying to attack the rim, or you get threes.
3 points, right.
That was like the only thing it was. And I remember thinking, like, I get it in college because of the style, the spread outness of it, what you see. But like when you get in the NFL,
that's
it doesn't
hard.
Really translate. Yeah.
It doesn't, because they'll stay back on you. They'll
right.
adjust to that. Yeah.
You got layers on your defense, right?
Absolutely. Come up and tackle.
That was one of the things that when I watched film of the Cardinals, I was always like, man, you know, they haven't really understood, like, you need to have that intermediate passing game. Like, it's not like college football where you live on big plays. This is the NFL. They're going to make you at least have, like, a 7-8 play drive. You might get some chunks, but you ain't getting too many big, big plays. Like, if you do, like last night, DK Metcalf's touchdown reception, you've got a missed tackle. You've got a bad angle. Like, you've got a missed assignment, if you will, from a player, because you just don't find defensive players out of position in the NFL like that, whereas you do find that a little bit in college. So he's gotten better at attacking and implementing plays to attack that intermediate portion of the field. Kyler Murray's got better at throwing at that. And I think Cliff Kingsbury's got better at identifying, hey, we're not just going to send a bunch of guys vertical. Like, we got to have some deep digs. We got to have some deep bow routes or out routes, things that attack that 10 to 20 yard range or 10 to 25 yard range of a defense, because that's what they're giving us right now, given how good our offense is.
All right, O'Quinn brother.
Yes,
young
sir.
Baby brother. Matt Nagy. He's obviously said that he has tested for the vid on Monday. He felt good despite the diagnosis. How does this team feel with the Nagy diagnosis? And listen, we all know that he takes credit for the great play calling that they have, even when he's not calling it. It's he's the head coach, and he makes the decisions on how those things are going to play out. Now, that's interesting. The special teams coordinator is going to run the team, not the offensive coordinator. Chris Tabor will run the team meetings during Nagy's absence. He will be running what's going on. What's your take on this? It seems to be one of those things. The Bears are a team that is struggling right now. They currently have four players that are reserved based off of the COVID-19 deal. And they've dealt with other injuries, the long list of injuries as well on this team. But they seem to have played some pretty good defense while their offense has continued to struggle. Is there a chance that this team does better? Is there a chance that Justin Fields does better? Is this a positive in some way? Is there a silver lining here? Or does this make them more of a sitting bear?
I'm kind of curious to see what happens, because it's almost like this is a glimpse for the Bears organization to kind of see what game day looks like without Matt Nagy. Mm-hmm. And if there is any offensive uptick, now granted, you're playing at home versus the 49ers, who haven't been necessarily
bad.
Yeah. But there haven't been what I think their standard's been there for the past couple of years. So maybe there's an opportunity here. But I think if your offense looks anything better than what we've seen from Justin Fields, which – you know, he's struggling statistically right now. Now, it's not all on him. You know, we tend to always put it on the quarterback. The reality is you're having a hard time finding any receivers that are getting separation. The offensive line has not played well. He doesn't have much of a complement with the rushing attack. And then look, and he hasn't played the way he's needed to at times. He's holding on to the football too long. You know, that's one of the issues that I think you saw from him at times at Ohio State, was when he was having a hard time diagnosing and couldn't get the ball out of his hand quick onto that first read, he was usually holding on to the football, trying to create something or trying to look for a running lane. And when it wasn't there, he's getting sacked. So, you know, the people who are witnessing this now with the Bears are the same people who saw this with the Ohio State Buckeyes, and especially early on with Justin Fields' career. And so if your expectation was he was going to come in, he was going to light the world on fire, unfortunately, we're not seeing any rookie really do that.
Right.
I mean, a lot of these guys need some time to develop. And you know, unfortunately, they don't have the opportunity to do that. But how that relates to this game is I just think it gives you a glimpse or window into, okay, like, what does this dynamic look like between Justin Fields and the coaching staff and the offense removing Matt Nagy? Like, is Matt Nagy maybe, I don't want to say the thing holding it back, but you do wonder, you know, if they win this game at home, given their recent skid, what this could look like moving forward. Maybe that's something that ends up working against Matt Nagy. Now, again, well, we know he's reportedly said he's doing well. You hope he's doing fine. There's no complications with COVID. But it does give us a glimpse into what could be for the Chicago Bears on the horizon if they play well, if they win this game.
I don't think they're going to be better without Nagy. I don't think that the results...
It's hard to be much worse.
Okay, so here's my take on that. There's the possibility. I would say it's more likely for them to be worse than it is for them to be better. And the reason why I think so is because there's no definity in that. Like, it's not definite in terms of Matt Nagy. This isn't like Las Vegas, where you have a team that is rallying around the replacement of a head coach. It's like, let's do what we can do. We have respect for this guy, da-da-da, so on and so forth. And not only that, but we're a good team. Let's try to salvage our season. Let's not let it go off the rails. It seems as though they've accepted the challenge of what their circumstances have provided to them. I don't see that in this Chicago Bears team. I see a team that, again, they play decent defense. It's not, I don't look at it as being elite. They still give up, you know, the big play. They still give up plays, and it's enough where they can't win. I mean, they got torched up by Tampa Bay this last game. But again, I just don't know that this offense is going to improve in a way where you look at it and you say, you know what, it's Matt Nagy. Nagy is the reason why this team isn't good. Nagy's the reason why Justin Fields is struggling. I will say this. It's hard to gauge and measure, as you mentioned earlier in your point. It's hard to gauge and measure if a great performance, a different performance this week against, as I mentioned, a wounded 49ers team is actually comparable enough to say, okay, that cures all the ills of what we just saw happen the week before on a record-breaking day where the biggest headline out of the game is Tom Brady's 600 touchdown ball being given away, not the game itself. So to me, I look at this as one of those things. I don't think that it defines the Bears. I don't think it defines Justin Fields, and I certainly don't think it defines Nagy, but I also believe that the outcome of this game will dictate and determine a lot as to how you look at the entire coaching staff and what you do moving forward, because you're now talking about, are you going to waste another draft pick, yet another high draft pick on the most important position in the game, which is obviously the quarterback.
I don't think they're anywhere close to that. I just think they're closer to letting go of Matt Nagy than they are moving on from Justin Fields. I think they want to find someone who can work with him, get the best out of him, and for whatever reason right now, it hasn't been Matt Nagy. I mean, we saw the best of Mitchell Trubisky with Nagy in his first year together. And then it started to fizzle out. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder how much of that was actually Nagy then, given some of the staff changes he's had in the years, and maybe where they're at now. You know, is that more revealing of what their early success actually was in Chicago? Was it really Nagy, or was it more of what they had on the staff that he's moved on from?
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This scenario is very similar to something else, right? Like you've got your day planned out, and then you have something that kind of throws a wrench into your plans.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh no, how do I handle this? Am I prepared for handling this? It's almost like the New York Jets when Zach Wilson went down. And they don't have a backup, right? Like they're looking at a guy in Mike White who has to come in as a backup, had not thrown an NFL pass attempt before this past weekend. And the Jets, after the game, realized, oh, no.
We better do something else.
Zach Wilson's got a sprained PCL. Now, it's not season-ending. He will mix the next 3 or 4 weeks. We can get into the injury. But as ill-prepared as the Jets were, thank God, by the way, this happened before the trade deadline. If not, they would have been having to try to sign someone off the street, right?
Yes.
And maybe that's where Cam Newton would have came into play.
Oh, but in this case, that's interesting.
They bring back a familiar face, Joe Flacco, who was previous there. He gets to trade in one green jersey for another and go back up to the Jets.
The Eagles.
Maybe help them out a little bit, right?
I mean, does he? They just got mud mash stomped by the New England Patriots and another rookie quarterback in Mac Jones. Does Joe Flacco help this team?
Well, I don't know that he gets the start. Right. I mean, he was there with a different coaching staff, so it'll be a new system for him. And I don't know how familiar he is with this offensive system, but he's played a lot of football. The guy was a Super Bowl winning quarterback, Super Bowl MVP with Baltimore. He can get it done. In fact, I would venture to say this. Not only does he give you a better chance than Mike White, here's my hot take for the day. He gives you a better chance with the roster that's around this Jets team now than when he was there.
Oh.
So I'm saying right now, he might even give you a better chance of winning than Zach Wilson.
That's where I thought you was going.
That's where I'm going. Okay. Because I think his experience, I think him not holding on to the football for ages will be better for the offensive line, better for this offense. So it may sound like a hot take, and the odds are stacked against him having to be with a team that, you know, really is going to be, I don't want to say unfamiliar, but think about some of the new additions to this team, the new offensive system, all those things. It's going to be an adjustment. It's hard as a quarterback to be able to operate when you've got all this newness around you,
yeah,
and you got guys flying at you trying to take your head off. So I do think he would be better suited once he feels comfortable within this system that he'll be running.
But see, does Joe Flacco feel comfortable anymore? You know, the Joe Flacco that I see now, I don't believe that's the Joe Flacco that we came to know in Baltimore. I think he's a little shell-shocked. I think he's been hit enough and he's gone through enough where I think he's over that. I think he's over that phase of his career, and he'll play and he'll try to win, but he's not going to put himself in harm's way. To me,
I don't think he will either.
Yeah.
I don't. I think what he'll do is he'll get the football out of his hands faster.
Fair enough.
You know, I think that's one of the things that just from watching all a quarterback play, especially for the young rookie quarterbacks, they're hold on to the football for a while, man.
Yeah.
It is at times you're kind of watching going, all right, what is this? Why is he getting the football out of his hand quicker? But no, I think that's one of those things that he might not feel as comfortable getting hit and all that. I assure you this, he'll get the ball out of his hand quicker,
yeah,
and he's not going to be taking as many of those hits because of that. So as long as, you know, they can get him up to speed relatively fast, I think he'll be all right. Like, I think he'll be able to actually, I mean, look, he can't do much worse than what we saw from the Jets offense.
That's very true.
That's the reality of it.
You know, they gave up a 6th-round pick, and if Flacco plays and plays a lot more, that converts into a 5th-round pick. Who wins this trade? Because to me, I'm wondering, what do you do if you're the Eagles? The Eagles aren't looking bad. They look like they're improving with Jalen Hurts, but you know, who wins this? Who won this trade situation?
Oh, Eagles easily.
Okay.
I mean, go if you want, have Lee or someone look up how many draft picks the Eagles have next year. And as much as if Carson Wentz continues to play, I mean, they could have 2 top 10 picks, 3 picks within the top 15.
Wow.
The way the draft order is looking at, 3 first-round picks within the top 15. And just to give people a sense of, like, how big of a difference that could make within their team, their organization, that's – I mean, if you're an NFL team drafting, you'd love to be in the top 20, top 15, because you could assure yourself the chance to get a difference maker, right? Like, after that, and when we always talk about this come the offseason around the combine – people will talk about, oh, this guy's going to go in the first round. This guy's going to go in the first round. You're like, all right, that's like 45 players. There's only 32 picks in the first round. And so the reality is not everyone who said they're going to go in the first round is actually going to go in the first round. And the harsher truth is when you ask teams, they'll say, yeah, we don't have those guys rated as a first round pick to us. You know, there's about 20 guys who are, and then there's another mix of about 12 players who get drafted in the first round that teams are either sitting there and they have a first round grade on that player, or teams trade up to the first round because they have a first round, you know, grade on that player. But there's not some consensus of like, oh, all these 32 players are all first round picks. Teams don't look at it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you can draft that many first round picks that high in the first round, you're basically saying, like, yeah, we're getting some studs in here to come in right away and change around the dynamic of this team. And so between those picks, the way they've drafted in subsequent rounds and been able to develop players in Philly, they've got a ton of draft capital. So to me, it's hands down, Philly won this. And they won this because they had the foresight of seeing that when Gardner Minshew was there to be had, they took him on. They got him on their roster so they could now move on from Joe Flacco.
Yep.
They move up Minshew to a backup quarterback spot, a guy who, look, statistically speaking, he's played some good football. Say whatever you want about his time in Jacksonville, but I think as you're looking at that period of time in Jacksonville, maybe people wouldn't mind if Gardner Minshew was still there. I'm just saying. Like, he brought a little spark to that offense, helped out that team during that time there. So I think they feel comfortable with him as a backup now if he has to go in for Jalen Hurts, and it allowed them the opportunity now to get a 5th-round pick conditionally essentially back for Gardner Minshew, right? Which, if I'm not mistaken, they traded a sixth-round pick to get him. Now they have the chance or opportunity to get something back even better in return. I think without a doubt, the Eagles won this trade.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.